The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's a good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us halfway there towards the big sports weekend. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com fantasy editor, joins us for his weekly segment, Who to Start, Who to Sit. It is waiver wire time. I know a lot of you guys, you have your fantasy football team, and you're just being crushed by who you're going to sit in weeks 7, 8, 9, usually in the middle of the season. That's where there's a lot of trouble. So Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, joins us every week, the Hall of Famer, at the bottom of the hour. Brad Edwards, ESPN BCS guru, checks in. The best chance of landing in the champ game, it's got to be Oregon, Alabama, I would think. And who he sees playing in the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl in Glendale, I know they're holding their breath over there. It could be Northern Illinois. I can't see a Northern Illinois-Fresno State game, but unfortunately, I think the Fiesta Bowl could. And there's all sorts of scenarios out there. But Brad Edwards, ESPN, BCS guru. It's cool. Somebody from the NFL Network, someone from ESPN with us on the show today. It's always nice. Eric Sorensen, our Senior Executive Vice President of Everything, jumps on in with his Facebook question of the day to get us off and running.
Can you believe 2 weeks from today? 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
Your Phoenix Suns open the regular season hosting the Portland Trailblazers.
You know, I was listening to Al McCoy call last night's game in the final moments, and Al said that he really likes preseason basketball simply because you have moments where you can see if players execute correctly. This is at a point in time where Kendall Marshall needed to be executed because he didn't execute correctly. Timeout, 30 seconds to go, down three, drives to the lane, tries for a layup, which would have put him within one. He gets swatted. And you can hear an Al's voice like, come on, are you kidding me? And then he misses two free throws. Kendall Marshall's been a bust. There's no other way to put it. 2 weeks from today, they get off and running.
Vegas, I like how I start this Facebook question, and then it goes into a 30-second Brad Sesmatt rant. Then it goes back to the Facebook question. That's right. Are a talk show host, so I guess that's what you're paid big dollars to do.
I'm supposedly supposed to be not into preseason basketball. Supposedly. So,
regardless.
It's preseason basketball.
2 weeks from tonight, it gets underway.
2 weeks from tonight, you're going to be at the Portland game.
The wise guys in Vegas have set the over-under, Brad, for your Phoenix Suns at 21.5.
Right.
So basically, they think the Suns are going to win about one out of every four times they hit the floor.
82 games, and Vegas has them winning 21.5. It's not good.
Question today.
It's not good.
Over under.
Yeah.
What you got? 21.5.
Oh, I got over.
Facebook.com/ I'm taking the over. Preps.
Taking the over on this one. You kidding me?
I like the over too because the Suns are going to beat a couple teams they're not supposed to. They do every year, except for last year.
Right, right.
And there's enough mediocre teams out there. Charlotte, they should be able to beat Charlotte a couple times.
Yeah, but Charlotte's saying they should be able to beat the Suns a couple times.
Yeah.
When you have bad basketball against bad basketball, it's bad basketball.
So 21 wins is what, like 3.5 wins a month?
Yeah.
Four wins a month?
Are we going to see bags in the stands this year at Suns games, do you think?
I hope not. They're going to be fun to watch. Just let them go out there and get their brains beat in.
I'd rather watch this than the slop I was watching 2 years ago where the owner was just fooling fans into paying full price to watch an aging Steve Nash and some guys that couldn't play dead, I call them empty jerseys, 2 years ago. Like, we're heading in the right direction. Well, no, you're not. I'm fine with this year. I want them to win 2 games this year. I'd be fine if they went 2-79 because then they'd get the number one overall pick in the draft and we'd see a very good kid from Kansas by the name of Wiggins coming here and playing. He was on the cover of SI last week. I'd be fine with that. So, all right, go over to Facebook and get involved in that. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino, you pull on down the slot and you head off to the White Mountains. You have some big winnings. Big winnings. They have the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament going on right now at the Honda Resort and Casino. You can get all the details there. Go do some fishing during the day and at night. Eat those crab legs. You know, hit that buffet. Watch some sports. Have some fun. Beautiful outdoors. The right time of year. It's at the Honda Resort and Casino. I'm thinking about the Honda Resort and Casino. Again, that's in the beautiful White Mountains. I would like to start with some things here in Arizona that are on my mind, but the baseball playoffs were compelling. The NFL's got some interesting issues going on. The owner of the Colts has lost his mind. The NFL is wanting to play more games, which I don't think is right. We have some Levi Brown news in today's show. If you go to my Facebook page, the 18-foot-long oarfish caught my eye. I guess they call it a catfish. Did you guys see this? This oarfish?
No.
Jared, did you see it? You didn't see it?
No.
This oarfish, it's on my Facebook page. It's like this sea serpent. You know, fishing's a sport, right? They're the Bass Masters. It's over on, a bunch of guys going out in their boats and catching fish. It's a sport, right? This fish, go look at my Facebook page, Eric, and you'll just scream like a little girl like I did, thinking, if I ever went face-to-face with this fish that washed up over on the shore in California, it's a monster oarfish. It's 18 feet long. This thing's huge. It's getting national run. Fishing again, we do fishing in our state. Big deal. There's the biggest, baddest brown going on right now, for crying out loud. This is the biggest, baddest, like, I don't even know how to describe it. That caught my eye. You know, on the sports end of things, I'm feeling pretty good today. Feeling pretty good. I saw some great baseball last night. If the Dodgers lose tonight, okay, the Cardinals are up 3-1. And a big reason why they're up 3-1 is because Matt Holliday stepped to the plate. Matt Holliday last night against the Dodgers.
From the stretch, Nolasco, the pitch. Holliday swings. He hits it deep down the left field line. This is a goner. Matt Holliday clubs a two-run homer and breaks it 0-13 in the process. 3-0 Cardinals in the third inning.
So the Cardinals go on to the victory. It's Cardinal Network there. If the Dodgers lose tonight with Greinke on the mound and a payroll north of $200 million, I know there's been the conversation that Don Mattingly is back next year, but does that suddenly change course? And you have to be a fool to not think, this came out last week too, the Dodgers would not pursue Robinson Cano because the price tag is too rich. If the Dodgers lose tonight, they're going to become the Yankees of the West. They will go after everybody and anybody, and if they're not going to go pursue Robinson Cano, they've lost their minds. Last night, there was some drama with Puig getting the high and tight pitch from Lance Lynn in the fourth inning. Puig got upset. Puig's got to understand that, look, there's two on base, and, oh, I don't know, the Cardinals are leading 3-0. Please understand baseball. Don't get all wrapped up in when somebody's throwing high and tight at you. And I've already predicted he will lead the league. He'll lead the world in getting hit by pitches next year in the regular season because everybody's just kind of waiting now that it's postseason. But his is coming. For the Dodgers, Don Mattingly has got Greinke today and Kershaw in game 6. So it's time for him to lean on the aces.
I don't have a lot of time to think about it. You know, we're down 3-1. That's not a real secret. But we're going to be playing at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Kind of the best thought I have is it's, you know, I got one of the best pitchers in baseball pitching tomorrow. If we come out here and play well tomorrow and get a win, I probably got the best pitcher in baseball pitching the next day.
See, I think the Dodgers are far more interesting. To me, the Dodgers are far more interesting than watching the Cardinals play. The Cardinals have a ton of injuries. Their manager has done a terrific job in working through that. Mike Matheny's done a hell of a job of getting his team to this point. If you go through all the guys that they've lost, but I don't find them very interesting. Okay, I'm all about watching a game and seeing guys that are compelling. Not many compelling guys on St. Louis's team. Eric, is there anybody on St. Louis's team? Matt Holliday hit a nice long home run. Back in the day when Matt Holliday was with the Rockies, he was pretty compelling. Now, he's not very compelling.
Not really.
No. There's not nobody. Really. There's no, Yadier Molina is not compelling. It's
They're just a bunch of really good baseball players.
That's all that there is there. You know, on the Dodgers end of things, Puig loses his mind. That's fine. Adrian Gonzalez, I like watching him play. I have no problem with that. I like seeing Greinke and Kershaw. Great pitching. Power pitching is what you have to have postseason success. You have to have power pitching. And the other, and to back up my point, over in the American League series last night, so there wasn't a whole lot of offense. I'm fine with that. It's postseason baseball. You have Justin Verlander who's throwing BBs at the plate, and Mike Napoli caught up with one of them.
3-2, the windup and the pitch. And he swings it. It's a high drive to left center field deep. Back goes Dierks, back by the bullpen. It is gone into the Red Sox bullpen. Mike Napoli takes a high fastball 96 miles an hour out of the park against the wind into the Red Sox pen.
Yeah, and the Red Sox win 1-0. So in a span of a couple of days, the Tigers have managed, or the Red Sox have managed to win games against starting pitchers Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. By the way, yesterday I went on my rant about Scherzer with Pedro, and I had some people around the Diamondbacks reach out to me to say and point out, you know, at the time, Brandon Webb was here, and Brandon Webb was not at 100%. And Scherzer, and I said to him, you know, the word on Scherzer was he was an injury waiting to happen. Well, you can come up to your own conclusions. We're not going to confirm or deny that. And I know there's all sorts of stuff on the back end, but it's kind of interesting. A little sensitive over there about the Max Scherzer thing. Come on, guys, lighten up. So the playoffs, you have Peavy and Pfister tonight. Boston's up 2-1. For those of you that didn't want the Diamondbacks to get Jake Peavy in July at the deadline, you were nuts then, and you were high then. You should have sent away people to bring Jake Peavy here. I know the Dodgers ran away and hid, but I think you would have had a better chance of getting the wild card. I love watching him pitch. He competes. He really does compete. That series, to me, I'm not big on St. Louis. Yeah, they win last night. I'm big on Boston. I want to see the Dodgers rally. I'd like to see the Red Sox put away the Tigers. Prince Fielder's been awful in the postseason. There's no other way to put it. Let's not sit here and sugarcoat it. He's not been good. On the other side, so the NFL and Peyton Manning and his coach and Jim Irsay and the matchup this weekend and all that stuff is what people are talking about. I'm into tomorrow night's game. Carson Palmer being picked off 11 times. You know, last year the Cardinals were picked off 21 times for the season. Remember how bad their quarterbacks were? Carson already has 11. Last year they picked off 21. Cardinals have scored 111 points this season, one more than the Cardinals had through six games last season. Some interesting parallels, yet they're 3-3. We'll talk about that and much more on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat, bottom of the hour, Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/pros to preps.
It's a good Wednesday tomorrow. Cardinals in action tomorrow night. I'll be out there at the Glendale for the game. Sports360AZ.com. That's where you need to go. Sports360AZ.com. You're saying, where's Pros to Preps? It's there. It's just we're transitioning, doing a site upgrade. 2 years into it, Sports360AZ.com. Still streaming the show, still doing. There's nothing that's changed other than the web address. Is that right, Eric? There's nothing else that has changed.
No, nothing else has changed. Yeah. New logo, new site, more interactive.
Yeah.
More stuff.
We're 2 years into this. So we looked at it and said, okay, let's be progressive. Let's upgrade the kitchen. You know, let's put in some new flooring. Let's do what we do when you have a house that you've built from scratch. So Sports360AZ. And tell your friends. I mean, we're all grassroots on this deal. Although I did get approached by somebody about they want to put a billboard up with me and the logo and all that stuff. I don't know. Do we need billboards? Do we have to have that? This is just a very nice businessman in town who's a big fan of what we do. And he said, hey, what if we put a billboard up?
Who doesn't love a good billboard?
It's on a very high traffic part in town. This is not, this is high end real estate. And this guy just called me over the weekend and said, I'm a fan of yours and what you're doing. I'm a businessman in town and I'd like to help you out a little bit further, which is what this is all about. All right. We don't sit here and have staff of 50 and 60 and say, well, we can't figure out how to get down to Tucson. So Brad, how can you do it for us? Or we can only send one person over to the Pac-12 media day, but you've got three. So Brad, how can we get your content? And that's happening here in town, by the way, which I think is pretty funny. It's like, come on guys, figure it out. Sports is kind of important here. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Santan Ford, General Manager Tim Hovick. I've talked to you about Tim and the people at Santan Ford here for a couple of years now. Why am I such a big fan of them? It's because I see what's going on there. Their customer service is very good. John Bernath, who runs the service department, it's terrific. Whenever I'm over there, they're busy, but they're getting people in, getting people out. To tell you, I've been in there so many times, I've never heard someone at the counter say, I'm not happy. You ever been in that spot? I'm not happy. I've never heard that. Sent people over to Santan Ford. They call me up or send me a text. Great people over there. Like being involved with a guy who does sports, like Tim Hovick does, the general manager there. Santan Ford. It is all about you. So There's some ASU stuff before we get really into the NFL here. ASU plays Washington Saturday afternoon. They're a three-point favorite. Carl Bradford today is wearing a wrapper cast of some sort on his left wrist. On Twitter, Chris Cartman with ASUDevils.com, who does stuff with us, put it out there. Carl Bradford, of course, one of the key defensive players. But there was this note that caught my eye this morning on Will Sutton. Been a lot of conversation about how Will Sutton this year is not having a good senior season. Will Sutton was the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year last year. Gil Brandt, who is one of the gurus of the National Football League when it comes to the scouting department. Eric, you see Gil every year at the Combine. And Gil's got a lot of opinions. Gil Brandt wrote this morning on Will Sutton, midpoint of the season, he did a story on 10 players that Johnny Manziel, Marcus Mariota, but he felt like he needed a comment on Will Sutton. Quote, I speak to a lot of college football teams and their players about preparing for the NFL, what they should and shouldn't be doing. I always ask if they know anything about horse racing. The usual reply is, no, they have no idea. So I tell them about handicap races in which weights are added to the horses to balance the field. Adding just 3 to 5 pounds to a 2,000-pound horse can throw him off completely, I'll tell them. Imagine what adding just 5 pounds can do to your game. Then we discuss the difference between adding good and bad weight. This is all on Will Sutton. Gil Brandt continues, I think Sutton added a lot of bad weight in the offseason, which resulted in lost quickness. He was a dominant player for the Sun Devils last year, playing at around 270. He recorded 23.5 tackles for loss, including 13.5 sacks. This year, listed at 305, Sutton has been missing in action. In 6 games, he has just 2.5 tackles for loss and 1 sack. Brandt finishes. It'll be interesting to see if Sutton drops the weight after the season in preparation for the NFL draft.
What a great antidote. That's just that. That's a guy that has been doing it for a long time and knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
And you know what, Brad? He's dead on.
When you watch Will Sutton, it's like he's got a lot of junk in the trunk now. It looks like he's carrying a piano around on his back at times.
And he's getting injured every game. It's never a big injury, but, you know, they'll blow the whistle and you'll see the refs run over and you'll look down and, Will Sutton's down again.
But remember that big prediction of Carl Bradford and Will Sutton about the number of sacks they're going to have this year and set the all-time record? How's that working out? It's why you don't make – it's fun stuff for us to sit behind microphones and get all excited about. But that's just one of those deals you don't need to say, because then when you're at the midpoint of the season and you're struggling and he's struggling – it comes back to bite you. The midseason All-American teams are being published all over the place. And Will Sutton, of course, Pac-12 Player of the Year, Defense Player of the Year last season, is nowhere to be found on any of those teams. In fact, if you go up and down them, you see quite a few players from Stanford and Oregon. Even Utah's kicker's on there. Ty Montgomery's on there from Stanford as the returner. He is the best at what he does. Deion Buchanan from Washington State. David Yankee, a guard over at Stanford, made it. Grasso, the center at Oregon, made it. And when you go through the Anthony Barr, who probably is the player of the year so far on the defensive side of the football, the linebacker from UCLA, he's on there. Bishop Sankey is the running back of the year so far. Man, Kadeem Carey is so far off the radar screen. When I watched Bishop Sankey last week, he's fun to watch. As Gus Johnson calls him, the Bishop. But Kadeem Carey, if I'm watching those two backs, I'd rather take Kadeem Carey on my team, but they have not made him available. He has not had a marquee game. The one game where he was on TV nationally against Washington, he got crushed. And they have Marcus Mariota as the quarterback of the year, the sophomore there, who's thrown 17 TDs, no interceptions, 10.5 yards a carry. A lot of great college football this weekend. They've got Manziel as second team. Think any of that has to do with Manziel having a loss on his resume or Manziel's off the field stuff?
The latter.
Do you? I think the Manziel off the field stuff, like this Saturday, I have no reason to watch Auburn, Texas A&M, but I'm going to. Why is that? Because Johnny Manziel's playing. I'm going to find time to watch him play this weekend. Somewhere along the day, you know how we lay out our weekend. Somewhere in there, there's going to be at least an hour while I'm watching Johnny Manziel.
When was the last time you saw a highlight package that featured like three highlights of a Texas A&M running back running a ball in.
Never.
Or a pick six.
No, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen.
Manziel runs 30 yards, scrambles out of bounds, first down. Manziel takes it up the middle, 15 yards, touchdown. Manziel scrambles around, throws it 45 yards down the field for a touchdown.
Right. No, it's candy. I mean, some would say it's crack. You know, I don't like to make drug jokes like that. Then there's this Jim Irsay, Peyton Manning story. So the game Sunday, yeah, I was going to watch it anyways, Denver and Indianapolis, but I'm going to watch it now because I really believe Peyton Manning's going to throw for 9 touchdowns and 800 yards. I think everything that's come out this week where Jim Irsay, I don't know if he's trying to, Tony Dungy had an interesting point. Tony Dungy is suggesting that Jim is trying to make this personal. Well, I think he's done that. Dungy's saying, I think that what he's trying to do is provoke Peyton Manning. Why would you want to do that? And there's always going to be the segment of the population that points out that Peyton Manning has not won enough championships. There's always going to be that side that says he didn't win enough in Indianapolis. At the time when the Colts bottomed out and took Andrew Luck, I thought it was a brilliant move. I'm sure there's some of you that would say today, oh, they should have never taken Luck. They should have kept Manning. You know, in the NFL, there is no loyalty. In professional sports, there is no loyalty. I go back to Steve Nash being here in Phoenix two years longer than he should have been here. And it can be such a polarizing topic, but to move the Colts forward for the next 10 years, and Peyton Manning's not going to be around that much longer, I have no problem with Jim Irsay. I have no idea why he's trying to stir this up. This was Jim Irsay recently on winning Super Bowls.
It's past our expectations, my expectations. Again, it's about championships. I think when all is said and done 15 years from now, we want to have more than just one of these. So that's what it's about.
I've only won one.
And I've pulled this off of a video, and when he says one of these, he's pointing to his Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
So
for context, and I like that.
Yep.
They reached the playoffs 11 times with Manning. So they went 1-for-11. That's one more Super Bowl win than Dan Marino has, okay? So let's just calm down a little bit on this.
And Manning's supposed to speak today, obviously. Yesterday
it's going to be crazy.
It's going to be a zoo in Denver, but I'll be interested to hear what he has to say about it.
Tony Dungy also added, without Peyton, there would be no Lucas Oil Stadium. This team would be playing in L.A. right now. I don't understand Jim saying this. I don't get it, but again, the soap opera that is the National Football League or professional sports in general, it's great drama because if I'm Andrew Luck, let's turn it around away from Peyton Manning. If I'm Andrew Luck, I'm feeling a little bit of pressure this week. I didn't play well on Monday night. My team didn't do well. And now I've got Peyton coming back to remind everybody of how good he is. And my owner has now called out Peyton Manning. He's gone out there and he's tossed the stone through the sling at Goliath. Okay.
And in defense of Luck, his receivers were horrible on
Monday
night.
No, they were. Kobe Fleener was
awful.
But
he didn't. I mean, he didn't.
No,
Luck would even admit he didn't play his best game. So.
No. Do you think they were looking ahead to this game?
Oh,
and
sure.
That's always one of those deals. It's like, and we're going to talk to Mike Fabiano here in a second on the fantasy football front. It's like this week, everybody's excited for San Diego at Jacksonville because Jacksonville's been bad. Well, let me fill you in on something. They're getting better, and I know they're horrible. But San Diego comes off an emotional Monday night win, and they've got to fly cross country and get themselves jacked up to play Jacksonville. That's a trap game. I know, Colorado ASU. You'll go back on that. I know. It's easy pickings. And then there's the whole deal outside of the Irsay Manning thing. The NFL is leaking it out there, as they tend to do, about wanting to have more than one Thursday night NFL game.
Oh, no. Why?
So let me get into this. This is a $9 billion company. And the players union, is the players union ever going to step in and say, no, we are not going to do this? And whatever happened to this whole player safety thing that you guys are preaching? So let's turn around in the most violent game and let's add another game because people will watch it. There's no question people will watch. But let's take our employees and throw them out there for yet another 4 days later to get grinded up. And oh, by the way, maybe we'll fly them to London to play this game too on a Thursday night 4 days later because we don't really care because we're the owners of the NFL.
It's like Bruce Arians said, Brad, at his press conference on Monday. Someone asked, so how do you prepare on a short week? And he said, we don't practice, we walk through.
Yeah.
The players can't handle the grind to come back 5 days later if they practice midweek.
But then, Eric, on the other side, you have like Matt Flynn. Okay, we were making fun of Matt Flynn this week. Matt Flynn, I saw where somebody broke it down, made $500,000 a completion in the last 2 years. Okay? So this guy goes from Green Bay to Seattle to Oakland, now to Buffalo. $500,000 a completion. He completed 16 passes. And so the envy and the, and this goes back to the Calais Campbell, the wave going on and booing Matt Schaub. Fans are so bitter that they're not the ones that won the lottery. And they don't care. They just want to see their games. They don't care about player safety. I really believe most fans don't care.
And Goodell sees dollar signs. Oh, more Thursday night games means more eyeballs, means more money.
I disagree with you. The owners see the dollar signs and they point at Roger and say, do this.
One in the same.
Yeah, well.
One in the same.
He could have a backbone and say, guys, you are killing away the crop here. You're killing away the crop. But if you put Eli Manning, even at 0-6, and you follow that up with Peyton Manning, you would have gargantuan numbers. That's just the way it is. And they're not going to put the Cardinals on a national game against the Rams on a Thursday night every week. It'll be a combination of let's go get the Patriots and let's go get the Broncos and let's go play the hits for these big games.
And they'll put those teams in the better spots.
Yeah, I mean, they may play the Cardinals at a 5:20 game, but
right.
They'll have an 8:20 East Coast start, and,
right.
And we'll just grind these guys through. Michael Fabiano on the other side, fantasy football. We love talking to Michael about the fantasy football stuff. Also still to come in this half hour, next half hour, Brad Edwards, ESPN BCS guru, who has the best chance of landing in the championship game, because this is the first week where it is all coming out, the numbers being broken down by the computer. You would say Oregon and Alabama, but maybe there's a different way to look at it for the college football fan. Up next, fantasy football with Michael Fabiano. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Get all the latest Arizona sports news from the high schools to the pros. Follow us on Twitter at Pros2Preps. Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sussmat.
And every week, Michael Fabiano with us, NFL Network, NFL.com, the fantasy football Hall of Famer. Okay, I'm getting a lot of Joseph Randall. I'm getting an awful lot of Jared Boykin. Where do you want to start first on waiver wires? Because it seems like that's the questions I'm getting overrun with on those two guys.
Well, it looks like Randall's going to be the guy there against the Philadelphia Eagles this week for the Cowboys. And the matchup is good. I think he's a flex starter. And certainly anytime a running back who's going to start for an NFL team becomes available on the waiver wire, you pick him up. The same goes with Brandon Jacobs, who had a huge game last week against the Bears. He's got a great matchup this week against the Minnesota Vikings. So Brandon Jacobs is another popular guy. Now, in terms of Jared Boykin, I think he's more of a deep league, third wide receiver in fantasy leagues. Anytime Aaron Rodgers is throwing you the football, you're going to have some value, especially when you have guys like James Jones banged up, and of course Randall Cobb is out for several weeks. So Boykin is a deep sleeper if you really need help at the wide receiver position. The matchup isn't the best in the world, though. Remember, Cleveland's got a pretty good pass defense, but Boykin's definitely on the radar.
Michael Fabiano with us. Andre Ellington in a PPR league, getting overrun with questions about Andre Ellington. What do you see from the Cardinal?
I really like Ellington as a flex starter, and this is a guy that I've actually talked about. He's more explosive than Rashad Mendenhall. They're basically splitting the touches in the backfield there, and this isn't a great matchup. Seattle's defense is very good, but they're also much better at home than they are on the road.
Yep.
So Andre Ellington, to me, is a better option in fantasy than Rashad Mendenhall, and I would start him as a flex. If you're in a PPR league and catch the ball in the backfield, even better.
Steve, I've got my waiver wire first pick, Zach Stacy or Randall.
Boy, I'll tell you something. It depends on what you need, to be quite honest. Now, I'm assuming that's Joe Randall and not Reuben Randall.
Yeah.
Zach Stacy is going to keep the job for a while, whereas Joe Randall may be the starting running back for the Cowboys for a couple of weeks. So in the long term, I would go with Zach Stacy.
Terry and Sholo, Keenan Allen with a waiver wire pick or Aaron Dobson with the Patriots?
Definitely Keenan Allen. He's been fantastic over the last couple of weeks. He's one of the top five wide receivers in fantasy football. Phillip Rivers has found his new Vincent Jackson. He really likes to go to this kid. He trusts him. Keenan Allen's the go there.
Michael Fabiano with us. I'm in panic mode with Chris Johnson thinking about Joseph Randall on waivers in Dallas.
Yeah, I am also panicking over Chris Johnson, and I'm trying to trade him in the one league I have him, and no one will touch him with a 10-foot pole. I would start Joe Randall over Chris Johnson. I am done with Chris Johnson. If you have backfield depth, don't get crazy. Don't start Bryce Brown or Bernard Pierce over him. But if you have a running back you can pick up off the waiver wire, like a Randall, like a Brandon Jacobs this week, like a Zach Stacy, those guys are worth starting over CJ2K. Unfortunately, Chris Johnson has really fallen off the map over the last several weeks, and really over the last couple of years.
Getting a lot of questions about Whedon or Campbell in Cleveland. I'm not sure why, but I'm getting a lot of questions about that one.
If you're starting either one of those guys,
you're in trouble.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad matchup for Whedon, but do you trust him? Unless you're in a 2QB league, do you really trust Brandon Whedon? There are better options out there. I'd rather start Mike Glennon. I'd rather start Nick Foles. Heck, I might even rather start Thad Lewis at this point.
Josh Freeman and Nick Foles are also cramming my inbox on questions on both fronts.
Yep, Nick Foles is a guy that is a very good sleeper. I don't know that he's going to start this week. I tend to think he will. I don't know if Vic's going to be ready. So the Cowboys' pass defense is one of the worst in the leagues. I would start Nick Foles over Tom Brady this week. I'd start Nick Foles over Colin Kaepernick this week. He has got a great matchup. And Mike Glennon was pretty good last week as well, if you're looking for a quarterback. I don't know if he's going to be as good this week against Atlanta, but it is certainly a good matchup. In terms of Josh Freeman, well, if he starts for the Vikings, and all indications are that he will, the Giants' pass defense is pretty bad, Brad. It's pretty bad. Is he one of the 12 best quarterbacks in fantasy football based on the matchups for this week? No. But if your quarterback is on a bye, you're in a deeper league, you're in a 2QB league, the matchup is very favorable, and Freeman's available in a lot of leagues.
And I guess before I let you go, we're at that point of the season where the waiver wire is what is – everybody's trying to figure out waiver wire picks this week and next week. What advice would you give on waiver wire moves here in the middle of the season?
Just stick with it. And to be quite honest, this is a good week for the waiver wire. It's a really good week. You've got Joe Randall. You've got Reuben Randall. Percy Harvin. Don't forget about Percy Harvin. They're talking about him coming back sooner than later. And if you can pick up Percy Harvin right now and get him for November, I mean, that's a coup. That's fantastic. He's one of the best wide receivers in the league in fantasy football. The guy makes plays when he's out on the field. And he's available in a lot of leagues. Don't be afraid to pick him up and stash him. Play the matchups at the quarterback position if you don't have that elite quarterback. Right now, Tom Brady, not an elite quarterback in fantasy. Colin Kaepernick, not an elite quarterback in fantasy. Robert Griffin III, same thing. Don't be afraid to play the matchups. Pick up a Nick Foles, for example, this week against the Dallas Cowboys. He played extremely well last week in Tampa Bay, and that was a really tough matchup on the road. Another thing people need to remember is that kickers are people, too. I'm going to be interviewing Blair Walsh from the Minnesota Vikings for NFL Fantasy Live this week, and kickers are putting up huge numbers. Did you know that Mason Crosby in his last three games has scored more fantasy points than LeSean McCoy?
Wow.
And that's insane.
Yeah.
And Crosby's available in a lot of leagues on NFL.com. Don't avoid the kicker position. Don't put in a guy just because he has name value like Sebastian Janikowski or Adam Vinatieri. Pick up a guy like Mason Crosby, who wasn't good last year and wasn't drafted in a lot of leagues this year. Always remember that. And finally, if you're streaming defenses, watch out for the Chargers this week. The Vikings have a good matchup. The Dolphins have a good matchup. And if you don't have that elite defense, the Patriots are another one have a good matchup against the Jets. If you don't have that elite defense, streaming on the waiver wire can be extremely important and valuable in your quest to win a championship.
Talk to you next week. Appreciate the time as always, Michael.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Michael Fabiano with us, NFL Network. Always good to catch up with Michael Fabiano. And what is on his mind in fantasy football stuff, he, of course, over at NFL.com and the NFL Network. You can, if you missed any of that, it's always up on Pros to Preps, a very popular segment of what we do. Levi Brown caught my attention. So, big bad Levi Brown, it's just gotten worse for him. The Steelers put Levi Brown on injured reserve yesterday. He's done. Levi Brown, now the Cardinals will not get any compensation for that trade with Pittsburgh. None. They just get rid of him. They take the first step in getting rid of Brown's contract, which they are going to do. They had to restructure his deal, paying him $3 million in signing bonus. They lower his salary cap number by almost $3 million. They have a $6.5 million cap charge for 14, but they don't owe him any more cash. Brown was due to make $6 million next season. So, Levi, here is $3 million to please go get on the plane. And, oh, by the way, it's really too bad you hurt your shoulder in warm-ups. You didn't hurt in the game. Hurt it in warm-ups.
Sounds Michael Beasley-esque in a way.
Oh,
here's some money. Go away. Himself.
Yeah, please leave. Except Levi wasn't a bad guy. Okay, he wasn't a good football player here, but he wasn't a bad guy. But see, that goes back to what I'm talking about, Erica, in terms of fans hear these stories of players getting all this money, and the mistake by the Cardinals ends up costing more and more and more. I heard yesterday I was talking to an agent friend. He said, go look up the number of players that are already on injured reserve this year. I said, where are you getting at? I said, I don't have the exact number, but just go look it up. And I said, well, what? Are we talking about 100, 200? He said, oh, it's north of 200 already. And think of the amount of money that the injured reserve players are costing owners. He said it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars for guys sitting around not playing football. It was very interesting. And so I want to go do that. I don't have the time yet. But he said it's really a good note when you look at how players will say they're injured in August and September, and the injured reserve rule, will you put them on IR, they're done for the year. But are they really done for the year? Could they have been able to come back and be a productive employee for you? And that ownership has got to look at the amount of money that they're just throwing away every year. It was like the Jonathan Cooper injury. Well, I went nuts in August. You think the Bidwells are pleased that Jonathan Cooper, their first-round pick, is done for the year on a meaningless, worthless preseason game, and they're having to write him a check, and he's not there to help them out? I think he could probably have helped Carson Palmer have a little bit better protection if he wasn't playing these stupid preseason games. Now, people don't want to get into that stuff in the middle of the season, but the amount of money that's sitting there dead this year because they got hurt in preseason. We're going to shift gears on the other side. ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards joins me next. BCS standings, final year of those are coming out. If you're an Ohio State fan, I guarantee you, you're not going to want to hear the next segment because you're screwed. There's nothing you can do. Nothing, Buckeye fans. That's next.
Like our Facebook fan page for the latest news from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/pros2preps.
Brad Sussmath with you. Sports 360 AZ. Larry Scott is going to be in the building on Saturday before ASU plays Washington. So there's reason to get to the game early. And some of the lesser tier bowls are going to be there. I talked to some of the Fiesta Bowl guys this morning and said, okay, so what is the deal with these reports that Wisconsin could play Baylor here? And they just kind of laughed, said it's so early in the season, but the chance of a Big Ten team coming out here for that game, we just don't see it. Here's Brad Edwards now who joins us, and he knows. ESPN College Football Insider, analyst College Game Day on ESPN Radio. Brad, it's Brad Sussmath. How are you?
Doing well, Brad. How are you?
I'd be fine if I have a good Fiesta Bowl game because I've heard out here it could be Northern Illinois or Fresno or something, or Louisville, something along those lines, which just doesn't sound attractive. But I wanted to hear from you. You know, I mean, am I going to have a game out here to really like? Can you see a Baylor-Wisconsin matchup? I don't see it. Am I missing something?
Well, you know, for starters, as I'm sure you're aware, Fiesta has the last pick this year, has
right.
The leftover team. And so, you know, if there is a non-AQ, a Fresno, Northern Illinois, that more than likely that's where they're going to end up. So that, you know, that would put a hole in things right there. Now, as far as Wisconsin, it's funny because I can't see Wisconsin falling that far. I've had them projected in the Sugar Bowl for a few weeks now. You look at their schedule, and it seems pretty likely to me that they're going to win out. And at 10-2, you know, especially 10-2 on a 7-game winning streak, I think they'd be a really difficult team to pass up. And so I don't think they'd make it past the Sugar. But if you're trying to figure out who else could be there, I think that, you know, your best case is if the non-AQ doesn't get in and that Louisville is undefeated. And if Louisville's undefeated, I think the Orange grabs them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody like Wisconsin is picked up by the Sugar, then that leaves you conceivably with the Florida State Clemson loser as the team to take on the Big 12 champ. And I think that would be a good game, type of game that you're looking for.
Yeah, as long as Oklahoma doesn't come back out here for a while. I mean, Oklahoma.
Tell you what, they might have taken care of that themselves.
No, that's true.
Looking at the Big 12, because Big 12 is a conference that, you know, quite often will put a second team into the BCS. And, you know, now that Oklahoma has a loss before playing Baylor, you know, you start looking, and I mean, it helps them that they don't have a conference championship game. So there's not a good team that's guaranteed to end on a loss. But at the same time, most of their big games are in the last few weeks of the season. And so, you know, a lot of the teams that you would look at as, you know, as possibilities for the BCS are going to, you know, are not exactly going to be on a roll at the end of the year. And if Baylor doesn't go undefeated, then, you know, who knows? I mean, it's there are all sorts of possibilities there, but Oklahoma is definitely, you know, put itself in that, you know, back in that category of a team that they might be the Big 12 champ, but it's a team, like I think most of the conference this year, that you just have a difficult time getting excited about.
You can follow Brad Edwards on Twitter at @JBradEdwards, ESPN College Football Insider Brad Edwards with Brad Sismet here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm curious about the gap that you see right now between Bama and Oregon with the ratings coming out the rankings coming out this weekend.
Well, the gap is big between Alabama and Oregon right now, just BCS-wise, mm-hmm. because Alabama's getting almost all the first-place votes in the polls, and Alabama happens to be the number one team in the computers right now. So you put it all together, and there's going to be a big gap between a team like that and anyone else. But what I think is more significant is that there's currently a very large gap between 2 and 3. Now, Oregon is getting a few first-place votes, but where they're not getting first-place votes, they're getting almost all the second-place votes in the polls. And so ultimately what that means is that for anyone to finish ahead of them in the BCS standings without them losing, you know, that team's going to have to find a way to get ahead of them in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck. I mean, as big of a game as we have this weekend with Florida State and Clemson, I still don't see the winner of that game. Even if they win in dominant fashion, I still don't see them, you know, getting up in the top two of ballots instead of Alabama or Oregon. And if that ends up being the case, and if they come off a game like that and they're still sitting there a very solid number three, not getting much attention for number two in the polls, then their chances of unseating a team like Oregon, without a loss, are very slim.
I'm getting a lot of Ohio State fans that are whining and crying, and it's just like, guys, here's the deal. You just have to win your games. I can't help the conference that you're in at this point. I can't help what happened to Michigan. There's really nothing Ohio State can do on this, because we would agree that the winner of the FSU-Clemson game is going to be ahead of Ohio State, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what you'll see when the first BCS standings come out, is that the winner of that game will be solidly ahead of Ohio State. And when you look at the Buckeyes' remaining schedule, that's not likely to change. I mean,
right.
Unless they just go through and start dominating everyone, I really don't know that that Florida State or Clemson is going to do something to let them back in. And on one hand, it seems crazy, the idea that a team with a name like Ohio State could win 25 games in a row and still not be in the top two at the end of the season, which is kind of what we're looking at. And I know. Ohio State's schedule is much more difficult than Louisville's.
Yeah,
but there's some similarities there as far as what's holding them back. I mean, it's not really anything Ohio State's doing. It's just the fact that they, in the grand scheme of things, don't really play that many teams that anyone thinks much of. And they've already gotten through Wisconsin and Northwestern, who right now looks like they're going to be the two best teams they're going to play all year. And what they really have to hope for is that one of the two teams they don't have on their schedule, either Nebraska or Michigan State, goes through and wins that other side and gives them a Big Ten championship game worth watching, gives them an opponent that they could actually impress people by dominating. And then they're going to have to do that. And that's the best hope they have, is that they can have enough voters buy in to the idea that they're better than FSU or Clemson, because in the computers, I don't think they will be ahead of them. So they're gonna need to make another surge in the polls.
Brad Edwards at @JBradEdwards on Twitter, and of course ESPN College Football Insider. A couple other questions, I'll let you go. UCLA in the next 2 weeks. There's a team that I'm looking at out here saying, boy, you've got Oregon, you've got Stanford, you have every opportunity if you're able to go through that landmine, which nobody's expecting them to do, but let's just say, Brad, they're able to the next 2 weeks, where do they go in the conversation?
Well, that's a great question, because in my mind, there's no doubt that if UCLA were to go undefeated, they would be the number one team in the computers. But I hesitate to go as far as to assume that the voters are just going to move them up there as well. Now, look, there's no question that Alabama's going to stay number one if they keep winning.
Right.
But I think there are legitimate questions as to whether voters would just naturally move UCLA ahead of an Ohio State. Would they move them ahead of the FSU-Clemson winner if that team's still undefeated? I don't know. I mean, logic tells you, you know, if their schedule is really as difficult, you know, as we're making out to be, if Stanford and Oregon are as good, or and even Washington for that matter. And of course, then there's a small detail of having to beat Stanford or Oregon or Washington a second time.
In
the conference championship game. And so, yeah, the natural assumption is that, you know, is that that would be enough to get them up to at least number two in the polls, pretty much, you know, taking over Oregon's spot. But I don't know if we can assume that just because of there being the number of voters there are and whatever preconceived notions they might have, you know, whether it has to do with UCLA just not having the exposure because they're on the West Coast, or, you know, whether it's some perception based on recruiting rankings or, you know, recent success on the field. I don't know. But like I said, UCLA should be in the top two if they went out, but I don't know that it's a slam dunk just because I think the polls would be a little bit unpredictable if it came to that.
And that is a team that is very intriguing to me. Do you have one on your board as we go down the stretch that you're saying, you know, but you better keep an eye on this group because they've got the schedule that they could jump into the middle of all this?
Yeah, if there's one that nobody's talking about right now, well, let me just go outside of the undefeated group and go to South Carolina. You know, if there's a chance for a one-loss team to get in, you figure a one-loss SEC champ would be the most likely. And South Carolina right now, just kind of hovering just outside of the top 10. I think that they would be number 10 right now in the BCS if we could see it this week. But nobody's talking about them like they're discussing LSU and A&M. But if everything goes well for South Carolina, not only do they have a big game coming up next week against Missouri, and then a couple weeks after that, they've got Florida. But if everything goes perfectly for them, they'll close the regular season against an undefeated Clemson, followed by an undefeated Alabama in the SEC championship game. And if you were to end your season knocking off two undefeated teams, I think that would make quite a statement as to the strength of that team. And, you know, to me, the big question is where would the one-loss SEC team fit in? You know, would a one-loss SEC champ rank ahead of? Is there any way they could finish ahead of Ohio State? I'm doubting it right now, but you know, who knows? I think it depends on how things play out. Right now, I would give them a decent chance to be ahead of an undefeated Baylor, and certainly ahead of an undefeated Louisville. But we'll see if it ends up playing out that way.
Last question before I let you go. We got about a minute. ASU out here, Arizona State season. You have a thought on where they are, where they may be headed, and just the Sun Devil season?
You know, I was disappointed with the Notre Dame loss because I don't think Notre Dame's that good of a team. And I can't sit here and criticize ASU and say that I expected them to, you know, be a top 15 team this year. But I thought they had an opportunity that they let slip away. And, you know, the Pac-12 is a tough conference, and I can see at this point them, you know, going anywhere from you know, 9-3 down to 6-6, just because there are going to be so many toss-up games left on that schedule. You know what? I guess that's the big thing is that the Notre Dame game, and we'll see what Stanford ends up doing. At the time when they got blown out by Stanford in that first half, we were thinking Stanford's a really good team, and then the last 2 weeks you saw Stanford really everywhere except the scoreboard got it handed to them by Washington, and then they lose at Utah. Now you're wondering, is Stanford even a top 10 type team? So I don't know. I think it's just a lot of inconsistency by ASU. I think they are capable of being a really good team when they play well. It's just a matter of putting it all together more often than not. And you know what? Except for the top five teams in the country, it's difficult for most teams to do.
Appreciate your time and your insight. Hope to have you on again sometime. We'll talk about the Fiesta and other stuff, Brad. Thanks.
No problem. Take care.
Brad Edwards. You can find him on Twitter @JBradEdwards, ESPN College Football Insider. You can always find us. We have our website. It is now Sports360AZ. Pros to Preps is there, but we're moving you over to Sports360AZ. It's 2 years. We put a fresh coat of paint, moved some furniture around, actually bought some furniture finally, and, you know, we're not sitting on milk crates and all that stuff. We're having fun with this. We continue to grow the brand, and we're on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Of course, White Mountain Radio, the good people of White Mountain Radio, and we appreciate all your support. You guys, check it out. We're grassroots here, the first to admit it. Just sitting here doing our thing around Arizona sports day in and day out, 24/7. Check it out on Pros to Preps now, Sports 360 AZ. I'm Brad Cesmat.